Welcome to a brand new episode of the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast, Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, once again, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. As much as I would like to say we have an epic crossover for you today, nonetheless, not so much. But we do have two great epic guests for you today. Two guests who have been on the show numerous times before, one of which is Don Ramirez, the other is the one, the only, Matt Burns. Why have these two guests crossed paths? Well, let me tell you, that's because in his effort to document the Frederick Underground music and art scene, Don Ramirez has asked, or finally crossed paths and met up with the one, the only, Matt Burns. And in the interview you're about to hear is them discussing Matt's background in the indie music scene, the punk scene, kind of transitioning into the convention scene and into the music, not so much the music, the independent movie scene. So, I must, before I continue, let me just say that in this episode, we are working with our brand new mixer, and even though there might have been a slight mix-up on my end, it didn't even show up in the audio because, well, both Matt and Don have great booming voices, and they carried very well, so whatever minor mishap I had was not really there or showed up, so that's grateful. And I must say this, the content you're about to hear is strictly, I'm going to say this, belongs to Don Ramirez and Matt Burns, and we are so thankful here at the show that Don allows us to record these interviews and post them up on our show or our platform for all of you to enjoy. So I'm going to step back right now and let the interview begin.
Matt, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready when you guys are.
Let's have fun. Yeah. All right, today's date is
Groundhog's Day.
Sunday, February 2nd, 2020. I'm here with Matt Burns and Christopher Lumiser of Long Coat Mafia. What I'm here to do with Matt is I really want to explore your history, but I thought it was important that we talk about the projects that you're currently working on. Let's beat up everything that's coming up in your near future, and then let you and I go back in time and see how this thing become such a part of your life.
Absolutely. Like I said, yeah, well, I mean, I've kind of been retired from the local music scene for the last 2 or 3 years. I was in it for about 15 years, promoting shows mostly. I was in a couple bands here and there, but anyway, so what I kind of do now is I like working in independent films and in conventions like horror and comic book conventions. I founded the Four State Comic Con in Hagerstown, Maryland, which is still running. The Carolina Fear Fest, which we will be doing Memorial Day weekend in Raleigh, North Carolina, that's all horror stuff. And I also co-promote the Creature Feature Weekend, which is in Gettysburg, PA, Labor Day weekend. So, I mean, so those are some great events we got coming up. And also a movie that we just worked on. Actually, Don, you worked on it with us, and right. Chris did as well, right. for a day or so. Remnants, a paranormal horror movie shot right here at the Rock School and among other places in like Gettysburg and whatnot. We will be screening that, doing a public screening of that, you know, a premiere, if you will, a premiere of it, if you will, on April 25th. It's a Saturday night at the Waynesboro Theater in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. So that ought to be a lot of fun. It was really an honor to have like guys like Jim Krutt from Dawn of the Dead want to be in it. And,
right.
You know, George Stover, who's in a lot of movies. Monique Dupree, who's in a lot of trauma stuff. I mean, it was really a great time and a great event. I mean, Mark Byrne, the guy who wrote and directed the movie, I think he's really got something special here, and I think it's really going to take his production company. This is the 10th movie he's made, by the way, so he's been around a while, and I think it's really going to take him to the next level for that. So I really think that I hope that good things come of it. So,
tell me a little bit more about the creature feature that you have coming up. and how long you've been involved with Creature Feature. And you said that's where?
That's in Gettysburg, PA. It's only the second year show. It's only the second. And we don't have a whole lot to talk about right this second, unfortunately. I know the promoter, Craig Yastrzemski, he just got the hotel down. He's getting ready to do the floor plan with the vendors and all that stuff. I know he's probably got a few guests he's getting ready to roll out. I can't really say anything because he hasn't announced them yet. So, you know, I mean, I don't want to jump the gun on that or whatever. But we had a great time. It was at the Wyndham, at a nice Wyndham hotel up there, right off of Route 15. You know, the main drag off of Route 15 and Route 30, and it. Last year we did very well. Last year we had Corey Feldman. Did you really?
Yeah, we had Corey Feldman. What's he like in
person? He was an interesting guy to say the least. That's what I've heard. Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I mean, he's very nice. I mean, he's a little shy, but he was very nice to all the fans. Talked to all of them, made them all feel welcome, which was nice. We had him, and we had his brother from Lost Boys, Jamison Newlander, who played Alan Frog, and we also had Tim Capello, the saxophone player. If you remember him,
right.
I mean, he actually came out and played, and a lot of people don't realize he's a real musician. I mean, he's really a great saxophone player. I mean, he toured with Tina Turner.
Believe it or not, here's one. Yeah. He played at the racetrack.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Did he really?
Tina Turner did a few nights at the Charlestown racetrack, Private Dancer, right?
Yeah, the 80s.
She had signed before Private Dancer.
Got huge. Yeah, before they got really big. Yeah.
And I saw him, and when I saw that film, I said, "That's fucking Tina Turner."
Yeah, Tim Capello. He was, you know, big and ripped up. He was big and all muscles. But, of course, he's still. I mean, you know, for being 60 years old now, he still looks pretty good. But he came out and he played, and he also toured with Ringo Starr, the Beatles, and a few other guys. So a lot of people forget, you know, this guy actually had done so much. I mean, people thought he was an actor. I mean, I think a lot of people thought they just got some buff guy,
to
dance around with the saxophone or whatever on the boardwalk. But yeah, no, he was a real musician, and he actually put on a really good show. He had a carnival sideshow open for him, which was fun. The carnival sideshow or whatever open for him, and trying to think of who we had a bunch of guests. How long did it go on for last year?
It's a three day show.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Saturday night was the night where we did the, and we also used the in the same parking lot. They have a big theater. Like, I think it's called Gateway RC Theater or something like that. And I mean, that's where we did all of our panels. We did, actually had the Tom Savini special effects school come in, some of the kids, and they turned the guy back into Dr. Satan, who was in House of a Thousand Corpses or whatever. I don't know if you were. So yeah, it was a great time. A little bit of something for everybody, I think, which did really well. So yeah, we're going to be doing that again here Labor Day weekend in Gettysburg again. And before this show, they used to have a show out there, and it ran for about 4 or 5 years. Also ran in Baltimore for a number of years, called Horror Find, and it was one of the original horror cons in this area. Unfortunately, the gentleman got sick, and I mean, unfortunately, he died, so he couldn't do it no more. So, so this is kind of carrying on the tradition of Horror Find, we'd like to think. I mean, it did really well, and hopefully, we can keep growing.
This is the second year that you're going to be involved with the Creature
Feature. Craig, like I said again, Craig heard about me, and I didn't walk away from Four State, but me and the other guys had some differences in opinion, and it was just, I mean, again, we're still on good terms. I'm still going to be set up there this time around in March. They got a new venue at Hagerstown Community College. Mm-hmm. They're going to be doing it at one of the rec halls or whatever there this year, and we're actually going to be screening a different documentary that was made about how Four State came to being or whatever, called Small Town Heroes. My buddies Jason Delgado and some other folks made that about it. I'm in it with some cosplayers and fans and whatnot and vendors, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Is that locally produced?
Yeah. Well, Jason was originally from Northern Virginia. He's in North Carolina now, but he was originally from Northern Virginia. I met him when I did the Four State Slasher Con, which is how I met Chris. Actually, Chris Lumser over here, and it wasn't a good show.
The thing is, you tried.
I just didn't know what I was doing yet. It was basically, I look on that show. I lost my butt on it basically, but it's a learning experience. I learned kind of everything what not to do that year. And I mean, Chris will tell you, it didn't help that some of the people involved with that show just were not.
Right. And yeah, I've Don, I've always given Matt a whole mess of credit for allowing us to be Absolutely. There to cover it. To
yeah, it was the first show you ever did. Yeah. Four State SlasherCon was the first show you guys ever.
We were as a podcast. We were like
brand new.
Yeah, it was like 4 months, 5 months out. Not even 5 months out of the gate. And to have someone like Matt Burns say, "Come on down, cut your teeth. Here's a panel." It's something that a lot of...
Next thing he knows, he's sitting on stage with Rochelle Davis from The Crow. And he's just like, oh.
And it's for podcasters. It's something that doesn't really happen sometimes for another, at least in their second year, if not third year. And to credit Matt for allowing us to cut our teeth sooner than later allows us to learn more, learn quicker, and be more... ahead of the curve.
I mean, you guys both know the only way to there ain't nothing to it but to do it. You know what I mean? You got to do it. You can't.
So, do you consider yourself in these roles with? And I want to talk about the same thing with the film production.
But with this relationship that you have with these conventions, are you a promoter, programmer, a combination of all?
More or less, you know, a little bit of both. Consulting. Consulting is a word because I've done it for a while. Fear Fest and Creature Feature were both brand new last year. So, you know, and I mean, I know my fair share of agents and fair share of, you know, bookers and whatnot. So, I mean, and not trying to pat myself on the back. I mean, I made plenty of mistakes when I was doing it, but I mean, it's just not trying to, you know, sound egotistical here by any means. I'm just, you know, but yeah, no, I mean, when the more you do it, the more connections you make, the more people you meet, the more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was gonna say, I mean, it's it's a bug out, you know, trying, you know, getting to hang out with people like Miko Hughes from Pet Sematary, you know, actually hang out with them, and they act like, I mean, it's almost like they're your friends, and it's crazy. I mean, but yeah, I mean, more, I mean, promoting and you know, helping book talent and whatnot. I mean, that's kind of more along the lines of what I do. And I mean, with the movies, it's more or less like, hey, I know this place we can shoot, or I know this band who will donate a song or whatever for them. Because again, these movies are very low budget. I mean, Remnants. I mean, you saw. I mean, you know.
Have you directed?
Not yet.
Do you direct?
It's coming.
You directed any scenes with Mark Byrne or?
No. I mean, it's coming though. It's coming. Hopefully, maybe later this year. We'll see. I mean, I got a couple things in the works, a couple scripts
that I am working on. So. One thing from our conversation, and I know both of us share a deep love of cinema.
Oh, of course.
And I hope we, you know, we'll
get. Hope we get to work together again. Yeah. You know, sometime.
And I was going to say, you know, give me a scene. Just let me shoot a scene. Let me be able to contemplate it, you know, part of your film or something like that. You know, just a scene.
Oh, absolutely.
But let's go. Let's go with Remnants. And when are you guys releasing it? And let's talk a little bit more about that. And then from that, I think you and I. Let's talk cinema. And then we're going to go up to your days as a punk rock promoter.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Remnants is going to be released, as I said, on April 25th. It's going to be on DVD and probably afterwards, maybe on some streaming. We are looking at some potential distributors for it, like professional distributors.
Where you guys would make some money.
And get it a little more out there than we could possibly do it ourselves. But yeah, I mean, we got screening there, and we got screening at Carolina Fear Fest this year as well. So, I mean, so we got those two coming up. As well as probably some other ones that'll pop up through the year, but it's just been a lot of fun. I mean, it's just been with
Mark and his production. Do you actually get to work with a budget? Do you guys have a budget?
Not really.
Like, I got you.
I mean, not really. I mean, we do what we can with it. I mean, I know, like, the next movie, I mean, because Mark likes to make different movies. He's not just a, I mean, because some guys, all they make are horror movies.
Right.
Or all they make are crime movies. All they make are dramas or comedies or whatever. I mean, he likes to make all different, I mean, all of his movies are different. He's got one that's almost like Alfred Hitchcock. He's got one that's like a black and white film noir. He's got comedies. He's got horror. He's got, I mean, he definitely likes to, you know, sci-fi. I mean, he's got one that's like sci-fi. So, I mean, so it's he's a little bit all over the map or whatever when it comes to, I mean, it's great. I mean, I like the fact that he tries to do different things. Because, I mean, what's the point of doing the same thing over and over again?
Right,
I mean,
it just
doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, I mean, but yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I mean, again, we do it for fun, and the people that do it with us do it for, you know, kind of fun, if you will, you know.
I mean,
anything to support the local arts and whatnot is great, so. That's kind of where we sit there.
How old are you, Matt? That's
like, I just turned 37 years old.
37?
Yeah, just turned there.
And where were you born and raised?
Here.
in
Charlestown, Jefferson County.
Jefferson County. You're in Jefferson County. So how does this film, where does film start for you? What are some of your earliest memories of I love this thing, be it the horror films or whatever it is?
Oh, my father. My father, he loved all this stuff. He loved heavy metal, punk rock, horror films. He loved all the same stuff I do. And yeah, my father was probably my biggest influences. I mean, the guy's he's my hero. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, we're still very close to this day. And he got me started real young on like Night of the Living Dead, Plan 9 from Outer Space. You know, the original, Maximum Overdrive. I love that movie when I was a kid. You know, because it was just trucks driving themselves around.
So when you were young, were there still any movie theaters open over in Jefferson County? If so,
No. Wow. I think they had already gone by then. But yeah, I was gonna say, my dad. Grew up, of course, going to the movies. He had the CW Theater downtown, and I'm sure you might remember that one. The one that later became the Blakely Bank. I forget what that one was called.
In Rancid.
On the Circle.
BB&T.
It was a Blakely. That
it was a beautiful movie theater.
And my dad's friend, I think, worked there actually too. I'm sure they used to sneak in and watch movies all the time together. But yeah, I mean, he used to tell me about seeing like all those movies, the horror, the blaxploitation movies, and some of the ones that used to come through there, and it was just, I mean, it just sounded so cool. And I mean, you know, I was going to the movies from the time I was like 3 years old. I saw Ghostbusters, I saw Gremlins, I saw, you know, Back to the Future. It was just incredible to me. I mean, I always had a passion for movies and whatnot. And I mean, I didn't really get back into the horror stuff though until I was a teenager. I mostly watched when you're a kid, you mostly watch like the ones that your friends are watching, like Wayne's World. I mean, not saying they're not great movies. Right, I mean, they're classics in their own right. But I mean, but yeah, it's just you. I mean, like I said, I didn't really get back into the horror stuff until I got mid-teens and started hanging out with guys that were in all guys like my buddy Tom Kemp. Unfortunately, who doesn't.
So would these experiences be VHS tapes?
Like for sure. Yeah,
now, are you renting them or swapping them back and forth?
Well, a little bit of both.
And let's talk some titles.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say. Well, I mean, we had down in Ranson. I don't know if you're.
Come on.
There was On Track Video. You remember On Track Video?
I had a membership.
Yeah. I was gonna say they were these. And I remember going in there, at least once a week, if not twice a week. And like I said, and then once I started seeing, I remember being like, 10 years old and seeing titles like Frankenhooker. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? What is this shit? I've never seen anything like this before. And it's just like, it's so crazy. There was that one. And there, of course, like the Dead Alive flicks. A lot of those things were just... I mean, all the 80s, Slasher, Chopping Mall, Slaughter High. I mean, I wish I could have gotten my hands on all of them back.
Right.
VHS tapes are worth a fortune now. VHS tapes are worth a fortune now. Return of the Living Dead, Sleepaway Camp, still one of my all-time favorites. I actually was just in a movie with Felissa Rose,
I see you promote her. She's part of...
Fear Fest. Yeah, she's part of Fear Fest. And she's part of Carolina Fear Fest. And yeah, we just did a scene. Well, my buddy Dave is doing actually a funny story. The Left is going to be on that soundtrack, most likely.
Speaking of, let me let you know this. I was on the phone with Jimmy Swope yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Brian Sefcik today.
Yeah, I love Brian. Brian's a great guy.
We're hoping to do a very special program with The Left or about The Left in June. We're hoping to do it over at O'Connell. So the whole idea would be the students from the Let There Be Rock School perform The Left songs. Jimmy would perform, Sourpuss would perform, and hopefully the Beats would perform.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Viet Cong. I had that album from when I was a kid. I found it. I want to say I found that album, Last Train to Hagerstown, in a thrift store. And I just liked the title. I was like, Last Train to
Hagerstown.
Like, what the hell is this? Like $1 and a good one. I bought it. I was just like, oh my God, these, and that's when later, of course, when you're late teens, early 20s, going into the music scene. I know we said we're getting ready to get into that, but I figure.
Yeah, we'll go there.
Well, what I was going to say, because that's how I got started with all that stuff is through bands like Bomb Threat and the Dolts, all girl band, Strong Intention, that era of the 180 Club. You probably remember that place.
I do remember 180.
Yeah, the 180. I was going to say the Cave was the other place there, and then they had the two clubs. And they also had one, I think it was called Dimension X once upon a time. It was a role that didn't last very long. It was like 6 months and it was gone. I mean, I think they just didn't have like, they weren't legal permits or taxes or nothing like that lined up. So, yeah.
Let's go ahead and let's talk. Yeah. We'll talk music.
Yeah, yeah. We kind of got off.
Let's go ahead and go with it. How do you know the Voodoo Love Gods? When do you meet Brian Sefcik? Because also, I want to be clear, the footage that you have of them at Cookies, at some point, we would want to put it on our YouTube channel.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
Because the whole thing, I met
those guys in 2001.
Okay.
They did a show at Slowpoke's Tattoos in Ranson. They used to do it once a year. They do a big cookout at Slowpoke's. And my old band, we were like the kid band. But I mean, I always hung out with all these older guys. I mean, because they knew. I was 16 years old. And I was roadieing for Vomit Snack, bands like that, and Strong Intention. I was going to see all these bands, on weekends when I was like 16 or whatever. And by the time I was 18, I had a little punk band together. And we were called Cow Tipped. We had a little bit of a following in the area and whatnot, but we mostly just, I mean, that's when I started doing shows. I started renting halls because we were 18 years old. Nobody wanted us.
Yeah, no one's
going to book an 18-year-old kid's punk band. That's when you start renting halls and bringing all your friends out to play and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you got a little scene going or whatever. But anyway, so like I said, I was doing the Vomit Snack. Craven Moorheads was another band they used to have, I remember. And then there was, the Voodoo Love Gods got back together again. You know, they had one of their many reunion shows.
Right.
You know, they used to reunite about every 5 years, it seems.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I met Brian at Slowpokes. We did the Voodoo Love Gods, and it was Voodoo Love Gods' ex-best friend. I still have the poster at my house, actually, of the concert.
Oh,
my buddy made. Yeah, I was going to say, I'd probably get you a copy of it, but yeah.
Who was in the Voodoos in 2000?
I don't remember. It was Brian, and I definitely remember Brian, and I don't remember exactly who was all the original guys, but like I said, but ex-best friend had Paul Kogel, a dude named Scott.
I know Paul Kogel real well.
And Ramon, who was a drummer in all those bands. He was a drummer in Strong Intention, Vomit Snack. And X-Best Friend was like this indie rock band. They were really good. Like, mm-hmm. I really think those guys could have made it. I really did. They were fantastic. I mean,
did you know Todd Young? He played
Box Populi. I mean,
I did too. I put them on over in Frederick, Maryland with the Voodoo Love Gods.
I used to book at the Shepherdstown train station. And that was when, you know, punk music, you could only really hear it at the all ages shows because the bars were all booking Stuck in Chaos. I mean, and nothing against those guys. I'm friends with Big J and all those guys. I mean, they did wonderful things for the music scene, but you know, if you weren't metal, you couldn't play the bars.
Right.
Until 2004, enter Cookies. And enter Cookies in 2004. I was the first guy to book at Cookies. And the place wound up getting pretty big, even in the area. I mean, we had bands from all over the four state coming to that place. It was the only place where punk bands could play, the only bar where punk bands really could play, because it just seemed like, you know, that a lot of the metalheads, you know, that hung out there all kind of stuck their noses up at you or whatever, you know. Because a lot of it's very different stuff. But I mean, and then, you know, once Cookies shut down, about 2007, 2008 or whatever. I mean, that's the scene I noticed every couple of years would move. You'd have like Hagerstown would have like the Leitersburg Grange Hall shows, and we did those for a while. We had Dr. Chud from the Misfits play there. Who's the big emo band that played there? Was it All Time Low, I think, played there? They were, you know, newer. They were like a newer, one of those like pop punk, you know, kind of Blink-182 type bands, whatever. But I mean, they were on the radio and stuff for a while, and you know, we had there, and then we had Cookies, and we had, I'm trying to, like I said, the train station went back and forth every couple of years. I think they'd run out of money, and they'd let me start doing shows, and once they got money, they kicked me out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you probably know the people that run the Ellsworths. I mean, they used to. I don't know if they do or not.
They still do. The wife,
Sylvia.
She didn't like me, because this was back when I first moved over to Frederick. I was dating her niece. She was still in high school. Her name was Nature. I was like 25 years old. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she was 18, but Nature telling me one time, Sylvia said, you know, let me ask you, what do you think a man like him sees in a girl your age?
Well, I mean, what don't you see? Let's be realistic. Let's call a spade a spader. But the Ellsworths ran the show. Like I said, but I mean, I really believe that that was the case. They literally would I think the place would get short on money and they'd let me do shows. And then once they got the money, they kicked me out. And we had a couple other places. We had the Tuscarora, Aurora, 10 weeks to shows out there and the kind of the Sticks and Martinsburg. The GK Center in Berryville, that was a fun venue. That was actually in the back of a fitness center, if you can
remember. Right.
I don't know if you remember that. It was also Percival, Virginia. We had a skating rink we used to rent out there. That was fun. We used to have like the daycare swindlers and the overprivileged. A lot of great local punk bands used to play there. The Ready Steady Go, great ska band used to play out there. I mean, it was great. There was a lot of places to play back then. I mean, no offense, it's not like now where there's nowhere to play.
Right. Yeah. It's just bleak.
It's pretty bleak. It seems like there's a show like once every 3 months. It's sad. I mean, they got to that point, but I got to the point where it's just, you know, I mean, and a lot of, the, and I was talking to my buddy, you might know him too, actually, Chris Houck.
Oh, yeah, I know Chris Houck.
Yeah, Chris Houck was a good friend of mine for years. And I mean,
Mike Nowt, are you friends with Mike Nowt?
Yeah, Mike Nowt. Yeah, we went to a record show. We went to a couple record shows together back in the day. Because, I hung out with all those guys. You know, Tommy Clevenger, I don't know if you remember him or not. But yeah, he was in the
scene. I knew the Pitzers. Houck, Chris Pitzer.
Yeah,
and now
Todd Green. You ever meet Todd Green? They call him Greeno. He was a bit of an introvert. Yeah, but he was a good friend of mine. We used to work down at Dave Weber's house. He used to have a mail order business with CDs and whatnot. And Todd and I used—that's how I met Chris Houck. And I mean, a lot of those guys, like Ramon and Gene Cook and all those guys. We all used to hang out. And like I said, I was like the.
I do know Ramon.
Yeah,
I do. I just haven't seen him in a million years.
I see him at Second and Charles. I work at Second and Charles. I see him at Second and Charles once in a while. I'll see him and Gene. I'll see both of them in there. And I mean, and that's what we talk about. We're like, man, what happened to the music scene? That's literally. I mean, Chris Houck and I literally just had that conversation 2 days ago. We literally just had that conversation. We're just like, what happened, man? It's just crazy. But Chris, we were talking about that. It's just like how there used to always be a place to play, and now there's like nowhere to play. I mean, you know, Chris is like, dude, I might get together an acoustic set and hit some open mics. That's literally about all I can do.
Right.
But I'm glad to see bands like the Exiles. I'm
real happy to see the School of Rock.
Yeah, the School of Rock. I'm glad to see that they're, you know, that Butch and everybody here.
To succeed.
Yeah, Butch and Don and everybody here are trying so hard to keep this going. I mean, because it's just so, you know, I mean, this is a research. This is what I used to do. And the only difference is I didn't have school.
Right.
But the Last Call Hooligans all grew up going to my shows. I mean, it was so.
Let's talk about this, and I do this with all the artists that I get on the stage.
Oh, sure.
Or on the mic. Let's talk about the things that are inside of you that drive you as a creative person that wants to put up with the bullshit that we both know that you have to deal with to do
for
these.
Sure. Yeah.
What it is that drives you to create these things? What is your vision? What are your goals? What are the things that you as an artist and a promoter of the arts, what's the core of Matt Burns?
I just started doing shows and whatnot because I had nowhere else to go myself. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where I still am. I want to be in.
What pulls you to the fringe? Like, you're putting these shows on, you're not picking Britney Spears, you're not picking cover bands, you're going after the fringe, you're going after these challenging artists. What is it that attracts you to the edge, to the challenge?
Because that's what I'm into. I'm not into Britney Spears. I'm not a pop culture guy. I've never been one to run with the sheep, if you will. I don't do that. I was raised not to do that. My dad didn't do that. I was always a misfit. I was always a nerd. I was always a geek. Only difference was when we read comic books back when I was a kid, we got the shit beat out of us for it. We got called names and everything. I got called derogatory names and everything else. But that's the thing, you know that there's something more to life than what the mainstream media feeds you. There's more to that. Let's be real, the mainstream, pop music when I was a kid still wasn't terrible. I mean, you still had your Nirvanas people still had something to say back then. Nobody has anything to say now. I never thought I'd say that. I hate it when my dad used to say shit like that to me. You know, all these guys have nothing to say. I always told myself, I'm like, I'm never going to be like that. I'm always going to be open-minded. But man, they make it tough, don't they? With the Justin Biebers and the
right. Oh, yeah. I know nothing of pop. Like, yeah, for me,
art and music essentially end shortly into the 21st century. You got to want to talk about the 20th century, I'm good to go.
Same here, all the way up to about 2005, 2000. Yeah, the early 2000s. That's just like, there it's just like, I can't do this. It's like, again, the times just pass you by sometimes. I mean, you know how that is. I just don't get it. I don't get, you know, a lot of these bands that these kids listen to now. I didn't get them back then when I was doing shows, a lot of them.
We talk about
sign of the times, I guess.
We talk about these shows and we talk about this history. You go back 15 years. Now, the biggest difference I see, like last night watching, or Friday night watching the Exiles and watching the guys from the Downstrokes, is the shows I remember as a young person in my 20s were very much like Lord of the Fucking Flies. And there was only young people there.
But yeah,
fist fights, chaos. There were no fucking adults. So going up to a show here that's laden with parents and adults protecting little kids and shit.
Yeah.
It's different. It's good.
It is good. We used to do shows at a place in Charlestown called the Sound Lounge, we called it. It was literally the precursor to this rock school. It was supposed to be a safe environment, you know. But the kids didn't like it. They weren't ready for that idea yet.
Right.
I mean, especially after they'd been to the train station and had Bosch pits and windows getting busted. Of course, that later all fell back on me. But kids want to get wild, man. I mean, they all have that streak in them. Being a teenager sucks. It sucked for me. I don't know if it sucked for you, but it sucked for me. It sucked for all of us, you know?
What were some of the earliest punk bands that you start to be a fan of, whose music you go out of your way to collect, shows you go to see?
Back in the day, I was saying, back in the day, you know, we had, you know, Bomb Threat, The Dolts, Vomit Snack, Strong Intention. I liked all those bands. They were all great. They were all just fantastic. But nowadays, I love the Helgramites. I always love those guys. I've been booking them for 15 years.
We're doing a show May 16th. At Sky Stage. Strausner is part of that, but he's doing bluegrass. He had a bluegrass.
I know he has a side project that he does of bluegrass and whatnot. That ought to be interesting. But yeah, it's good. The Helgramites I like a lot. Sourpuss. They're fun. I like those guys. Last Call Hooligans. Of course, I pretty much raised those damn kids. They'll tell you that.
What about national acts? Who are some of the national acts that you enjoy?
I still listen to all the stuff I did when I was younger, you know, Rancid, Dropkick Murphys, all the old stuff or whatever. One of the last bigger shows that I saw was a band called the 69 Eyes, who always been one of my favorite bands, rock and roll out of Finland, Helsinki, Finland. They're fantastic. And like I said, outside of that, Wednesday 13, I like a lot of the horror rock stuff, I guess. I know Blitz Kids getting back together. I might try to go see them when they tour around here. But I mean, that's, I don't really, I mean, again, the Coffin Cats, always enjoyed them. I booked them a bunch.
What's your thoughts on that, like an experimental music? Have you ever listened to any of that shit, like Einstein Neubauten, I think it's pronounced, that German band?
We had a lot of those weird bands that used to come to the train station. Because we used to have the punk shows there, and then we used to have the indie rock shows there.
What was the one guy that did, there was a local guy out of Frederick that did like an electronica kind of thing. If you said his name, I know we...
Trey Fry?
No. The name of his act, it was the name of a concentration camp. Some obscure... It's not Auschwitz. It's an obscure... Oh, I remember having one of his CDs.
Yeah.
He had a music shop over in Frederick, Maryland.
Schloss Teagle?
Yeah, that's them! Yeah. Schloss Teagle!
Richard used to have a shop right here.
Yeah, I thought he ended up in Martinsburg for a while.
He was right here on King Street. Yes. Yeah, Richard was his, I don't remember his last name, but Richard. I used to go in that shop all the time and buy punk CDs and shit off him all the time. I remember, like, and he used to always start talking about that techno shit. I was like, stop.
I had a hard time with
it. Yeah, and I remember one time I was at the.
Thanks for pulling that.
Yeah, Schloss Teagle. He's over in Europe now. He moved over there years ago.
He was a really interesting guy.
Yeah,
always enjoyed our conversations.
He's a little nuts. I did too, though. He was a cool guy. I mean, I remember one time I was at the Lost Dog, you know, in Shepherdstown, that little coffee house over there in Shepherdstown. I was passing out flyers for the next gig or whatever. And then I hear somebody from my, I'm turned around or whatever, and somebody from my back, all I heard is, nobody wants to hear that punk shit. And I turn around and it's Richard. He's messing with me or whatever. So Richard was a cool guy.
I liked him too.
Yeah. My dad bought an original The Day the Earth Stood Still poster off him for like $5. I think some of the, a lot of the shit he didn't realize he had.
The value of it.
Yeah, but he was definitely, I mean, yeah, he liked
it. What do you call his shop?
Innerzone.
Innerzone. That was in Frederick, too.
It was like upstairs. Yep. I remember it was like up a flight of stairs downtown. I remember it. It was like up on a loft kind of thing.
It had been, when I first moved to Frederick in 1990, it was called Megaphone Music. A guy named Jason Willett had the shop.
Yeah.
And when he eventually moved to Baltimore, it got passed on to Richard.
Richard. Yeah. Yeah, I forget his last name, but his name was Richard. I remember it. But it was like up in like a loft. Remember, you had to go up in like a flight of stairs. It was upstairs, like I said, in this almost like loft apartment looking thing. But yeah, Innerzone. You know,
Innerzone.
And like I said, I could point to you right where it was on King Street, too. It was right there on King Street. There was a hemp shop next to it, and there was a tattoo shop next to it at the time. Mm-hmm. Now there's nothing there because, again, it's right there by that 7-Eleven that we love to talk about. It's just, you know, the place in town has just gotten so run down, unfortunately.
I'll throw one of the other questions or subject matters that at you that I tend to discuss with some of the other guys. Then I want to talk a little bit about cinema, and then we could go to – how long we been going, Chris?
33 minutes and change, almost 34.
We get close to 60.
I figure we get an hour. I think it should be about an hour.
That's what I was thinking.
Usually that's about for a podcast. That's about usually the
everyone. Yeah, we've gone over when we have bands, but that's because you got three or four personalities.
I think that's a usual argument that what I've seen in the podcasting communities, it's like the atypical argument, like which. Like in the punk aspect, like which form of punk do you like, and you get fights over it.
Hardcore punk or crust punk, hardcore punk. Crust, power violence.
There was a time where it was crow bags and nothing else.
In the podcasting world, it's like, all right, how long should it be? 15, half hour, hour, 2 hours, more than 2 hours, right. And it's like that fight that goes on because they're. Loads of successful podcasts that go out there for an hour and they're great, and some go 2 hours and 3 hours and they're great. I've known podcasters that run polls: should we go longer? Should we go shorter? And it's always no, stay at the same time. Go 3 hours, 3 hours.
Right.
Should we go shorter? No, don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But a lot of ones that are successful, it's like if you need to hammer it out over an hour, hammer it out over an hour. If it takes less than an hour. So be it.
The one thing we've talked about with everyone we've interviewed has been drugs, okay? And I'm interested in your perspective in this, you know, because, of course, when you're young, you get that whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But your perspective, because you grew up in the panhandle, I want to share this, you know, drugs deeply affected my family, you know, and they've deeply affected the panhandle.
Oh, for sure.
When I left here, I leave West Virginia in 1990, roughly, and don't come back until 2003. But when I lived in Baltimore for a couple of years. That's how I get involved in film. I get some training in Baltimore. But heroin had a horrible impact on Baltimore when I was living there. Had a horrible impact on D.C. as well. Crack, of course, was eating.
And now it's kind of moved up this way.
Right, because I looked at it as an urban. This is an urban thing. It doesn't happen back home. I come home and
it's here. Yeah. It's an epidemic. I mean, I don't know if they're using it as some form of population control or what's going on here. But yeah, it's terrible. I mean, you know, actually, speaking of the old shows and whatnot, the first girlfriend I ever had, her name was Miranda, and she used to have a print copy zine that she used to make on photocopies.
Right.
Remember those things?
Yeah, I loved them.
Yeah. I still have hers, actually. Right. I still have all the ones that she made. Of course, I used to get shout-outs and all of them. She was kind of the first girl. You know, we used to go to all the shows together. You know, we were kind of. But I mean, unfortunately, that affected her greatly, and she passed away a couple years ago from an overdose. And it's still, as you can see, I still hate talking about it. You know what I mean?
Right. Just, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, the what that shit does to people and how, you know, people keep falling for it over and over again. It's like, God, it's like, you see what this shit does.
Would
to
you
people.
See it
Why
involved?
Would you do it?
I mean, all right, in our scene back in the day, this 80s. You know, marijuana, maybe some LSD, you know,
but you never had that. You never had the
there was thing. No overdosing. There was no deaths. Alcohol was easily the most dangerous drug that we dealt with.
Yeah, exactly. Because then, you know, then these tough guys, these agnostic front tough guys all turn into, you know, what the fuck you
like? Right. Everyone wants to fight. You've got drunk driving accidents.
What the fuck you looking at, geek? You know, that type of thing. They all turn into that, basically. It's like, I never did the drugs. I was always a proud straight edge guy. I mean, I still have never done any. To this day, I mean, just because I know what the fuck that shit does to people. Yeah, I mean,
right.
I've seen it. I mean, I just that's not something I want to be a part of, you know? I mean, it's just not something I want to be a part of. I just don't understand how people can keep falling for it. The pity that I have is that people's lives are so bad that they feel they need to resort to something like that.
Right.
I mean, I guess I always had a pretty good life. So I guess it never affected me to the point where I would want to try something that extreme, you know? But... You know, I feel terrible for people that whose lives are that bad that they feel they need an escape that bad to try that crap. I mean, I don't.
It also has a horrible impact on your art or your music.
Everything. I mean,
you can't play, you can't perform. You know, if you're all fucked up.
I mean, that's what I said. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, I know the popular theory says, "Oh, look at Jim Morrison, look at Kurt Cobain. Those guys died.
They died. Yeah.
It's like, how good could it have possibly made them if they're dead? I mean, all those guys, Janis Joplin, all those musicians that would experiment with those drugs and whatnot. I mean, yeah, they might have made a handful of decent songs, but what it cost them? What it cost them? They're all dead. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm just, I don't know. That's just my opinion. But I mean, it's just, I mean, but yeah, no, I don't want to see any kids fucking get involved with that shit. I don't. I wouldn't wish that stuff on my worst enemy.
Right.
I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
I like that. Let's talk about film. All right. Have you seen Joker?
Of course.
Okay.
I saw it in the theaters, actually.
I haven't seen it yet. I go back. I'm a fan of Todd Phillips, right? The filmmaker. My favorite rejection letter that I have is from 1995 New York City Underground Film and Video Festival. I was in Baltimore at the time. A bunch of my friends got into that. Todd Phillips was the program director. He was in charge of the festival. He was promoting a film called Hated, G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies. We ended up getting that screened in Baltimore and several other films that had done real well in his festival. He's one of the figures that I can look at that starts on the underground, you're into, what we're both into.
Right, of course.
And to see him mainstream.
Him and the other one is James Gunn. James Gunn, the director and producer of Guardians of the Galaxy. His first film was Tromeo and Juliet. From Troma. Okay. I was gonna say, yeah, James Gunn's another one that has worked his way up very high in the film industry. But yeah, but Todd Phillips too, absolutely.
And you have, you know, the one thing that I think in the arts, like the difficulty, and I'm dealing with this at Shepherd.
Oh, sure.
We've been trying to do some programming over there, is this idea that somehow the underground doesn't have an impact on mainstream art and culture. And it's the most fucked up mindset I've had to deal with.
Oh, absolutely.
You can, like, you can name a director. I can name a director. I can name other artists that start.
Well, everybody starts underground unless you're like Taylor Swift and or Justin Bieber, whose family has money. I mean, Taylor Swift's family were already millionaires apparently from way before she even cut a track, before she even recorded a guitar track or whatever. You know, which I mean, that's one thing I will give her. She does play her own music. She does play her own guitar and piano and whatnot. I mean, her songs are. I wouldn't buy any of her albums, but I do give her that credit. At least she doesn't know how to play. Mm-hmm. I'll give her that. But yeah, no, the underground has a huge influence on things. I mean, you know, how many kids you see walking around nowadays? I mean, you see Misfit shirts in Walmart.
Right,
now.
You see Ramones
shirts in Walmart.
Right.
I don't mean to cut in down this. I'll agree with you. The whole aspect of the underground, you brought up black exploitation movies. That was a large, pretty much underground thing because during that time, no one wanted to, in essence, it was straight out of the, coming out of the, I keep talking to this with a buddy of mine that during the 60s with the cultural, you know, African Americans had to be in one section and whites had to be in another.
Segregation.
We were just coming out of that, and still the whole idea of hiring an African person of color wasn't there. So someone decided, hey, wait a minute, no one's hiring my kind of people. Let me start doing this as an underground movement. And boom, you have this cultural revolution.
Subculture, if you will. Absolutely. I mean, Joker is literally a freaking movie about a guy who's mentally ill. The world has turned his back on this guy who's a misfit and a loser, and you know, he's, like I said, and finally, it's just somebody who's finally had enough. And that's where most people are in this world nowadays. Right. It seems like people have just had enough. It's very similar, I think, to the acts of the 1960s, I think we're on the cusp of something like that again. I mean, if not worse. I hate to say that, but you know, the mindset is there. You know, these people in the 1960s. You know, I mean, like Wayne Kramer from the MC5 said, you know, we were part of an entire generation that agreed that the direction the country was going was wrong. You know, we're the ones that were going to have to go to Vietnam. You know, we didn't agree with the way they treated people of color in America. You know, we didn't agree that they suppressed it. We just wanted to be heard. I mean, and that's what this Joker movie is. It's an entire generation of people, I think, they can relate to this movie, that just want to be heard. That you know, society or whatever is forgotten about. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, that's my look on it anyway. I mean, they just want to be heard. And I mean, it's just, and like you said, you mean some of the other, I mean, look at what I just say about comic books. Remember when comic books, like I said, you used to get beat up for reading comic books. You used to get, you know, head in the toilet, you know, and flushed for reading comic books. And now look at it. I mean, comics are making billions of dollars off these movies.
Yeah.
And now jocks are walking around in the gym wearing Spider-Man t-shirts and Batman t-shirts. You never used to see that.
Right.
A lot of the biggest stuff started out as an underground idea. I mean, it's absolutely
agreed. For me personally, it's one of the best experiences of my life, and it's taught me so much about art, and it taught me about the world. It was 1993. I was in Baltimore in UMBC, and you know, I thought I knew what underground film was. You know, I thought I knew. But my professor screened Mothlight, Stan Brakhage's Mothlight from 1963. 27 years old, everything I'd ever fucking learned about art just gets shattered.
Yeah, just gets thrown out the window.
One moment gone, you know. But it expands the conversation. It makes me a bigger artist. And always, the way I've always viewed the underground is it's very much like a Petri dish. You know what I'm saying? These are where things are experimented with. These where ideas are put together, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And to know its history. You know, you start to get into William Burroughs and you find out about Naked Lunch.
Yeah, Naked Lunch was good. You know. And I mean, look at movies. I mean, you want to talk about underground making an influence on the mainstream. What was any more underground in this area than the Blair Witch Project? Witch Project was made for what, $10,000?
Right.
It was made for $10,000 and made $20 million at the box office, something like that,
or more.
Yeah, or more even. I mean, I'm probably counting DVD sales and VHS sales. I mean, because it went through both sales.
Paranormal Activity was made for $35,000 and made like over $100 million.
That's what I said. Yeah, Paranormal Activity. I mean, so you want to talk about the underground not having an influence? I mean, you know, of course it has an influence. I mean, it's, I mean, and I mean, you know, same with Remnants. I mean, Remnants was made on a very small budget, but that doesn't mean that it can't, you know, impact people or impact the
Here's what I'm interested in this too, Matt. All right. They had, what's his name, Rob Zombie. This was years ago, but he put together a list of some of his favorite obscure horror films for like a Halloween thing. But the film he turned me on to, I'd never heard of and I thought was incredible, was Audition.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So me hear some of the obscure films that you enjoy that if you could let another cinemaphile like me or our audience know about. Check this film out, or a couple of them.
Okay, well, I was going to say, well, I mean, of course, I love Sleepaway Camp. I thought that was a great movie, great twist at the end. Of course, a lot of people kind of know that. If you're into horror, you kind of know that one. A movie that I really enjoy that I don't think gets a lot of credit, I mean, you can watch it on Tubi for free right now, actually, is a movie out of England from about 5 years ago called Don't Hang Up. I know that the title itself just makes it sound really generic, like one of those like Blumhouse, you know, generic movies. But let me tell you something: the thought that they put into this movie, and I mean the suspense, and it was great. I mean it was a great movie, and I mean you know, and it was just yeah. But Don't Hang Up. That's one I always try to turn people on to, and I'm trying to think of some other ones here. If you're into the 80s slasher genre, Intruder is a movie that not a lot of people know what it is. It was made by Sam Raimi, actually. And of course, you want to talk about another guy who went from rags to riches.
Right.
Went from the Evil Dead movies to Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man movies. You know, Sam Raimi is another one who's gone kind of a rag to riches story. And I mean, but yeah, Intruder had Danny Hicks, who was in Evil Dead 2. He was the main character. And it's just a fun, you know, slasher flick. I mean, there's nothing special about it, but it's very solid for what it is, for what it is or whatever. And Slaughter High, too, is another one in that genre. Slaughter High is really interesting to me because the guy who played the main character was actually a mental patient. And he killed himself right after the movie. After they made that movie. Yeah, Simon Scudamore was the kid's name.
Wow.
Yeah. Very, very haunting story there from Slaughter High. I mean, as I said, yeah, if you ever get a chance to check that one out, that's another one that's really, really mm-hmm. And they actually shot the movie in the mental institution where he lived. But they made it out like it was a school or whatever, but still. I mean, but yeah, I mean, you know, how, you know, they pranked this kid really bad and you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it was something. It was really, really a great genre flick. But I mean, another movie that I enjoyed, of course, this is more of a mainstream flick.
Go for it.
For a couple years ago was Bad Times at the El Royale. I don't know if you saw that or not. Jeff Bridges was in it. And Chris Hemsworth was in it. Chris Hemsworth played a bad guy, if you can believe that.
Right.
usually he's always, you know, clean. But yeah, he played almost like a man sometimes. And it had a girl that had a voice like an angel. She was singing. She was like a Motown singer that had kind of lost her way a little bit or whatever. And Jeff Bridges had Alzheimer's in it and whatnot. He played a great. I mean, I'm telling you, John Hamm was also in it. It was fantastic movie. All done in one location. All the real set, real actors, no CGI. I mean, it was just a real flick, real movie.
Some of my favorite filmmakers. David Cronenberg.
Oh, Cronenberg, yeah.
Videodrome.
The Fly.
I love The Fly. I love
with Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, and Videodrome is and Scanners and you know some of the stuff he's done. Spider's another one.
Yeah,
that's a good one too. And what about the guy that does John Carpenter and The Thing.
Fantastic film.
Kurt Russell. He's another great, one. I'm big.
John
and he does so much in his films. Like he does the sound.
No, yeah, the score.
Yeah. I've always thought he was wonderful.
Now, unpopular opinion, I did not like that new Halloween movie at all.
I haven't even seen that one.
I just didn't care for it. I'm sorry. To me, it just felt like a cash grab. I'm sorry.
Right. The one that just came out.
Yeah, the one that about a year or so. I think that now it's on like Netflix. If you ever wanted to check it out, I think it's on like it's on like you know streaming channels.
Somewhere.
Yeah, it's on streaming somewhere. You can probably find it. But yeah, I mean, I didn't care for it. I'm sorry. To me, it was just very predictable, very boring. I mean, it just felt like a cash grab. But I know it's like part of a trilogy. There's now a trilogy that they're doing. The new one's coming out this year, and then next year supposedly is going to be the last Halloween movie. Yeah, right. Okay, I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, yeah. As long as it makes money.
As long as it makes money. Somebody
else. Godzilla.
Now, it might be John Carpenter's last Halloween movie. Somebody will reboot that franchise. Like Rob Zombie did. Like Zombie did back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. But yeah, I mean, as long as something makes money, they're going to keep doing it.
What about the Alien franchise? Are you a fan of the Alien films?
I mean, yeah, they were good. I mean, they're not my favorite movies, but they were very solidly made. Now, Mark Byrne, that's like his favorite movie of all time is Alien, actually. He's a huge fan of that. I think a lot of it has to do with the generation thing, too. I was a little young when it came out or whatever. I don't think I was born yet. I think when the first one came out, but yeah. But I know it was groundbreaking filmmaking. It was really groundbreaking on the whole sci-fi genre, which now they made that movie called Underwater, which basically looked like Alien. It basically kind of looked like Alien Underwater.
Right.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. But yeah,
I got into the Covenant. I've watched it a few times, and that's Ridley Scott, who's original Alien. You know, so he gets to revisit the franchise. Right. And you know, I'm still working through it. I think it's a good film. Covenant.
It is. Yeah, very solid movie. It's a solid movie.
I love the whole idea that it's the bad android that basically has a god complex. You know,
of course, yeah.
And you go back to the original film, and it's the fucking android that kind of loses it there. You know, that the science officer. I forget the character's name. The one guy I tried to turn you on to get you to watch was Jim Van Beber and the My Sweet Satan. That won that film festival I was telling you about from 1995 with Todd Phillips. And 20 minutes, but just such an amazing piece of homegrown cinema. Done in Dayton, Ohio, of all places. He also he did a few features in his time. Still out there. He does one on Charles Manson. He does a whole Manson movie shot in Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
You know, it's supposed to be fucking California or whatever.
And I was going to say, because I know, like, that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood movie, the Tarantino.
I just saw that.
Yeah, I saw it in the theaters. I wasn't super impressed with it. I mean,
yeah, me neither. Everyone was telling me they thought it was his best. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
I'm telling you that right now.
Which one's your favorite?
Death Proof. Death Proof is actually my favorite.
Jackie Brown.
You know what?
Jackie Brown.
Number two was Jack. Would have been Jackie Brown. Yeah,
for me.
Great.
Jackie Brown for me.
Yeah, great, great.
I just watched that again recently. And it's just the low keyness of it, but it's an incredible film.
I mean, I just like the best line in the whole movie. What did he say? He said, "When you absolutely, positively have to kill every motherfucker in the room, except no substitutes."
Yeah.
talking about the AK-47 area.
Death Proof and Planet Terror were great homages to the grind.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I saw that over here at Berkeley Plaza. That was back when they used to have $3 matinees.
I saw it at the Regal.
At the Regal over here.
And it was fairly new when I saw it with David Wonger, who's the guy that edited my film, Trailer Trash. Yeah.
Did it have all the trailers?
It had every fucking thing. It was awesome. We saw it opening night.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. I saw it at Berkeley Plaza probably a dozen times. I would just go after work because I'd be bored or whatever. I'd just go after work and go see it. It was $3. $3 to see two movies.
Still, $5 is still cheaper.
Berkeley Plaza is still the best deal in town. Absolutely. It's still the best deals. I go see a lot of movies there still.
The fact that Machete came from those two.
My personal favorite trailer was Thanksgiving. I wish they would have made a movie out of Thanksgiving, the trailer. But
Thanksgiving.
The way they got
it. That was funny.
Yeah. I have a t-shirt of that somewhere, actually. It actually had the logo. Thanksgiving or whatever.
Chris, if you have anything, go ahead and bring it to a wrap.
All right. Because you were a promoter for music and doing that, what was the, in essence, learning curve that you found between going from promoting and booking bands to the con scene?
Just the bigger scale of it. I mean, I tell you, I mean, you know, just the bigger scale of it. I mean, it's wild going from, you know, local shows, which again, not sneezing at, you know, 100 to 150 people a night. But I mean, when you go from that to like 2,000 people, it's crazy. I mean, you the first time that happens, you're just like, I mean, you're just stunned. I mean, so really that's what it was all about, having to deal with bigger budgets.
space.
More space, more people. You know, I mean, it was definitely a lot more hands on than okay, we got these four bands playing at this venue. Go.
Matt, can I ask what's the most you've ever paid for a celebrity?
I don't like talking about that.
You don't have to say a specific name.
Can I say it off camera? I mean, can you guys shut this off for a second?
Oh, yeah, we can pick this up. Yeah, well, we can pick it up when we're done.
Yeah,
because we're going to go upstairs. I know a lot of
them don't like you talking about that. I mean, it's a professional thing.
They'll probably piss a couple of them off.
Yeah,
like, that motherfucker, right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, again, good question, but it's something I can't answer that.
But has there been, what's the difference between booking somebody for, have you learned booking somebody for shows, going from, again, band promotion to con promotion to booking someone for a movie?
Well, we haven't really gotten into the movie thing. I haven't really had to deal with too many, you know,
the behind the scenes.
Yeah, because again, you know, because actually the thing is, we don't work with. I mean, at least Mark doesn't, and I'm probably not going to either if I go forward with any of these features that I'm working on. We don't want to work with SAG actors. SAG is just too complicated. The union, you know, the SAG union. Of course, Don knows what that is. But yeah, but the SAG union. I mean, you gotta have certain food. You gotta take breaks. I mean, it's just a pain in the butt, basically. You know?
You're a gorilla filmmaker.
Yeah, exactly.
This new challenge, being going from a promoter to a movie maker or independent.
Well, I'm still going to do both. Obviously, but yeah, no. I mean, I'm always looking for a new challenge. I mean, I did shows for, like I said, close to 15 years. I mean, you know what? I almost think I did it for too long. I just got complacent with it. You know, I mean, some of the guys even in the scene will tell you, you know, that towards the end, I got real complacent. Lot of it. I was just, you know, I mean, half the shows I wouldn't even show up to. I mean, I needed a change. I mean, that's
right.
And this has been a welcome change. This has been a very welcome change.
That's it. Pretty much it for me. Don, you got anything else? Or
just real quick, let me get a close up on you and I'm going
to. If Don has nothing else to pretty much ask or anything like that, I'll cut this.
Cut all the way off on me, Chris. Let me get just a couple more. And this would be little clips for my film. Let's talk about your relationship with Brian Sefcik.
Oh, since I played with him in 2001, we've kept in touch over the years. Sourpuss is great. I love watching that. The Love Gods are always a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I know those guys are kind of coming to a close, but I hope they don't. But yeah, no, Brian's a great guy. And I mean, he's the king of the music scene, king of the punk scene anyway around here. That guy's freaking awesome. I don't have enough good things to say about him.
All right, now let's throw a little bit in there. Give me something for Adam Strausner and your friends in the Helvermites.
Oh, it's super pleasure to work with. I booked those guys more times than I can count, really. But yeah, no, I always love working with them. So much fun to watch live. I mean, if you ever get a chance to just watch an old school, you know, surf punk band, that they are the shit.
Marvin Kennedy.
Oh, I met Marvin actually when I was working with Conrad Brooks actually back in the day, and he worked with Mark Byrne for a long time too. Unfortunately, you know, Marvin's fallen ill recently, but he's
in bad shape.
Yeah, he's not in very. I was gonna say, yeah, we did.
I'm hoping to go over and see you next Saturday.
Yeah. I've known Marvin since except with Conrad Brooks, and then with Mark Byrne, of course. He worked with Mark on most of his movies actually. I'm sure he'll tell you about that. But yeah, no, Marvin's good people, and like I said, again, wish him nothing but the best.
Good. Thank you, Matt.
No problem.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, that interview, discussion, call it what you wish. If you wish to join in the conversation or ask Don anything about the Frederick Underground movement, the next time we see him, we could pass along those questions. Or maybe one of these days to actually just hold Don down for a few minutes and just speak to him about this. And if you have any questions, you could feel free to email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com or leave a comment in the pinned post, and we'll be more than happy to pass along those questions to Don. And have him answer him next time we see him, or like you said, hold him down, tie him down, because he is a very busy person, and from what we were asked show-wise, we were asked to further continue to help Don document a lot of these journeys that the bands and individuals have been on with their craft, and I definitely said yes, because it's very interesting to hear these journeys that these folks have been on, so we will be continuing to do that. So if you wish to catch these episodes, you're more than welcome to do so by going to one of our many, many outlets in regards to receiving our episodes. And that being said, well, we're going to switch things up by saying if you have a desktop or laptop computer, you can catch our episodes at our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, or iTunes/Apple Podcasts, depending on which OS you use. Stitcher Radio, Spotify, and yes, when YouTube decides to post, allow the episodes to be posted up on YouTube as well. So, but if you're on a mobile device, you could always catch our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, TuneIn, from what I understand as well, and the Podbean app, and where podcasts are atypically found. So, you're also, please note, you're also able to view our back catalog on our entire back catalog on our main website, which is, again, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. Just that if you're on a mobile device, you would have to get these episodes via the Podbean app, which is free to get and use. And be so happy to gain you as a new listener, whoever you may be. And if you so wish, to see which episodes are, if you wish to preview before you download, and you could do so by following our social media, which is, again, on most platforms. Our main platform that we tend to try to post up daily is Facebook, which our Facebook page is facebook.com/thelongcoatmafiapodcast. And we do have a Twitter page, Twitter account. Our Twitter account is Longcoat Mafia, and our Instagram account is also Longcoat Mafia. So feel free to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram if you want. And before I forget, we do have a YouTube channel. You would have to search for the Longcoat Mafia podcast once you go on YouTube. A lot of our episodes are posted up there, along with some videos of where we've been and what we tend to do at certain events. So you're more than happy to follow us on, or subscribe to us on YouTube if you like what you see and or hear. Please click that like button, and if you want to, if you have any questions or anything like that, like stated, you can always, always leave a comment down below. And always, as well, we do have an email address, so you could always email the show. It's easy to do. Our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. And we do have a Mixer, and we do have a Twitch account. I found it easier to stream to either Facebook, Twitter, or Twitch or Mixer, because the way OBS tends to do things on YouTube, it splits it up somehow for whatever reason. But still, our Mixer channel is mixer.com/LCMP, and our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/Longcoat Mafia Pod, and we're currently experiencing a little bit of glitch at our safe house, and we'll start to continue streaming either on Mixer or on Twitch as soon as we get that glitch fixed. So please stay tuned. We do have a TikTok, but we only have one video on there right now. As always, all the links are down below in the description, mostly on our main website, so you're always, all the links that you hear us say on our show will be in the show description, and can be found mostly on our, or if not always, on our main website, which is, again, thelongcoatmafia.com. podbean.com. Remember, it is, again, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And that being said, I'm going to step back for now and leave you this week. And I hope to see you next week. And who knows what might happen next week and who we will speak to, if any. But we do have another guest within the next 2 weeks, so please stay tuned for that. So I'm going to step back and leave you guys and gals this weekend, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.